a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m., our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews, and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin. Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Thursday, 26th of September. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Charlie. In national news, new research gives us a glimpse into why Gen Z is so miserable at work. Anna Murray of One News reports. The latest research hints that Gen Z workers may not be as happy as their colleagues from other generations. SEEK's inaugural Workplace Happiness Index has found that just 52% of Gen Z employees, generally aged between 18 and 27, are satisfied with their workplace. On the other side of the age spectrum, the baby boomer generation is the happiest at work, with 72% reporting job satisfaction. The survey, which consisted of more than 1,000 participants, identified five critical drivers to workplace happiness across all ages. These being purpose at work, day-to-day responsibilities, company culture, salary, and stress levels. However, SEEK Country Manager Rob Clark has stated that these driving factors are very different for workers from Gen Z, as salary is the primary driver and their employer's commitment to environmental, social, and corporate governance coming second. Quote, things like commitment to ESG is the second most important driver of happiness for Gen Z workers, but only 3 in 10 are actually happy about it at work. So you see this gap between what's important to them and what's actually happening. Clark added that this is not surprising to see salary as the number one factor in younger employees' satisfaction at work. This is because although traditionally people start their careers at the lower end of the pay salary, there are more trying conditions for new workers at the moment than past generations have had to deal with. Quote, only 4 out of 10 Gen Z workers are happy with their salary. That's not unusual when it comes to salary. But if you think about that generation, they are experiencing some of the highest cost of living, both from an inflationary point of view and a house price point of view.
The Prime Minister's Chief Science Advisory position has been left unfilled since Dame Juliette Gerard left in June. Fox Mayor of Newsroom reports. Despite the fact that a candidate was selected several months ago, the position remains vacant. Cuts across the public sector have seen the loss of 400 scientific roles, including agency-specific chief science advisors. Although the coalition agreements require the government to follow data and evidence, former science advisors have accused the government of viewing this requirement as inconvenient. Several policies have attracted criticism from researchers who say there is no evidence to support them. These include relaxed smoke-free laws, increasing speed limits, creating boot camps for youth offenders, expanding coal mining, and a tough-on-crime crime-style approach for gangs. The chief science advisor gives advice on these types of decisions, not always in line with government priorities. Dame Juliette Gerard advised Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern through COVID-19, the White Island volcano eruption, and the cannabis referendum. Newsroom understands that a preferred candidate was selected months ago, and it is unclear why the position has not yet been filled. This stall in replacing the role, combined with the loss of similar roles, were called red flags by Professor Mike Bunce, the former chief science advisor at the Department of Conservation. Bunce said that, quote, science advice is not a nice to have. It is a core part of the evidence base on which to make good decisions about some of Aotearoa's gnarly problems, from pandemics to climate change. The government also attracted criticism from Professor Simon Kingham, the former chief science advisor to the Ministry of Transport. He resigned earlier this year after his Office of Advice on Incoming Policies were reportedly dismissed under the coalition government. Upon his resignation, the position was disestablished, despite Kingham offering to contact potential replacements. Kingham claimed that, quote, some of the stuff that's coming out of transport is utter nonsense, and his advice was probably an annoyance for the government. Chloe Swarbrick, the leader of the Green Party, strongly criticised what she sees as a disregard for truth, data and evidence by the current government. It is very difficult to sit from the outside and try and ascertain any actual rhyme or reason or coherent logic as decisions that they are making, because they really do fly in the face of any actual data or evidence, Swarbrick said.
Charter schools revived as the bill passes its final reading, RNZ reports. Legislation aimed at reintroducing charter schools in New Zealand passed its final reading in Parliament on Wednesday. The third reading saw passionate speeches from parties for and against the new bill, which will revive this alternative education model. During coalition talks between ACT and National, ACT leader David Seymour was unwilling to compromise on charter schools. This sentiment was carried into Parliament as he spearheaded the discussions around the legislation. Seymour spoke about how all the house groups, including the Iwi Cheers Forum, had written to him expressing strong support for the reintroduction of charter schools. When talking about what the Iwi Cheers Forum had written to him, he stated, "They know that communities know more about how to engage their children than the people in Wellington most of the time." He then added, quote, "So we're going to invite people in communities to start up schools, and they're going to get the money the state would have spent on the same child at a state school if, and this is important, high standards are met." Seymour said these charter schools would be required to have high attendance standards, achievement and financial probity. New Zealand First MP Andy Foster said the change had been a long time coming, and the coalition government was keeping its promise. Quote, "The simple concept here is that all children are not the same. One size does not fit all, and it gives the opportunity for some diversification, some innovation." Labour MP Camilla Belch thinks that bringing back charter schools is a mistake. That is a risk that can make our children's education an experiment. Quote, "It is an experiment, and I tell you, it is the worst type of experiment that a government can make, experimenting on our children. If this doesn't work, the people who lose out are not the people sitting around this chamber. They are the people who are vulnerable children who miss out on having a quality education that they would have got if you spent this money in the state system." Green MP Lawrence Susan thinks this legislation is not about education, but privatising the education sector. Disputing this comment, National MP Carlos Bates said some charter schools would be not-for-profit and argued that this undercuts the opposition's criticism that the alternative education model was making about money. Quote, "This is about lifting student achievement. The opposition are trying to characterise this bill as being about the market, as opposed to being about ensuring we deliver opportunities for lifting student achievement here in New Zealand." Te Pate Māori MP Takuta Ferris explained that Iwi Cheers Forum only expressed support for this legislation on the basis that it would fund education models built on self-determination. Quote, "Tēnā rangatiratanga, models of education have been in existence since 1981, and you've never supported them. Don't go fluffing your feathers like you're doing something good for it now, because you're not." This bill passed with support from National ACT and New Zealand First, with Labour, the Greens and Te Pate Māori opposing.
In international news, Israel's top general says the country is preparing for a possible ground offensive in Lebanon, The Guardian reports. As an intensive bombing campaign across Lebanon goes into its third day, Israel's military chief, Major General Herzi Halevi, said that the airstrikes aim to destroy Hezbollah infrastructure and pave the way for Israeli troops to cross the border. In a visit to Israel's northern border with Lebanon, Halevi told troops, quote, "We are preparing the process of a maneuver, which means your military boots, your maneuvering boots, will enter enemy territory." Despite this statement, a spokesperson from the Pentagon, Sabrina Singh, claimed that a ground offensive did not seem to be imminent. On Wednesday, Israel shot down a long-range missile that Hezbollah had aimed at the headquarters of the Mossad intelligence agency near Israel's biggest city, Tel Aviv. U.S. President Joe Biden told ABC News that the risk of all-out war was real, but said that we're still in play to have a settlement that can fundamentally change the whole region. Three Israeli sources have said that the United States and France are working on a ceasefire proposal to halting the escalating fighting in Lebanon, but that no significant progress had been made yet. Blinken told Gulf Arab state officials this week that the risk of escalation in the region is acute. "The best answer is diplomacy, and our coordinated efforts are vital to preventing the further escalation." On Thursday, Israel said its warplanes were bombing southern Lebanon and the Bekaa Valley. This will enable the continuation of combat against the Hezbollah terrorist organization, the defense of the State of Israel, and create the conditions to enable the residents of northern Israel to return to their homes, the IDF said. Israel's bombing killed more than 550 people this Monday, in what was Lebanon's deadliest day since its civil war ended in 1990. Hezbollah said it aimed a missile at the Mossad's headquarters in support of our steadfast Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip and in defense of Lebanon and its people. It was also in retaliation for the pager and radio explosions that attacked the group last week, which killed 39 and wounded nearly 3,000 people. Hezbollah blamed the attack on the Mossad, while Israel has neither confirmed nor denied its involvement. About 500,000 people have been displaced by this week's airstrikes in Lebanon, with thousands of people displaced from southern Lebanon sheltering in Beirut.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Thursday, the 26th of September. Today's bulletin was written and read to you by Charlie Cunningham and Jonah Broughton.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
And coming up next for you, we have an interview with Azaka Gafoor about the Seek and report that we were mentioning earlier. But before that, we have Summer V with Key to Your Love. We are now joined by Dr. Azaka Gafoor. Azaka is a lecturer and master's and doctoral supervisor at the Department of Management here at the University of Otago. Her research interests have included disruptions post-COVID-19, working from home, organisational stresses, and she is currently researching the anthropomorphic nature of AI and human AI synergy at work. So welcome to the show. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
And so the first question I have for you is, this report from SEEK has highlighted that Gen Z workers' salaries are the primary drivers of dissatisfaction at work. From a management perspective, are there any strategies that companies could implement to address these concerns?
It's an excellent question. In order to understand what we can do from a management perspective, we need to understand that we're coming at the tail end of pandemic and a lot of disruptions. And Gen Z, and me included, have joined a career which has been starkly different from ones that our experienced colleagues had. So there's lack of resources, the expectations are higher, we are more under pressure, and we want the rewards to be the same. We want to be able to have success, we want to be able to have financial stability, we want to be able to buy our first homes. However, the actualization of those rewards is very, very low. So in order to understand salary from a perspective of Gen Z, we need to understand, is it only just salary? Because salary is a subjective term. What Gen Z wants is more autonomy, more freedom, more ability to be able to travel, experience. Salary is not just one indicator. So in order to have a salary as a successful indicator, we need to build around it. We need to build a safe space around it for Gen Z.
So another thing that the report tells us is that Gen Z workers' value initiatives aims at the areas of environmental, social, and corporate governance. What steps can we take in management to strive towards these goals, do you think?
So again, we need to understand the frictions here. Older generations wanted a financial stability. Younger generations are more focused towards having a sustainable life in the long term. In order to have both of these balanced out, we need to educate both parties to a little bit. And one thing that is very pronounced that Gen Z experience is the lack of embodiment of values within the sustainable environmental and government system. For instance, there's a lot of patriarchy, there's a lot of old way of thinking, and we do not hold the power to change that. We do not hold the positions to be able to create policies that can be skewed towards serving more of the purpose of sustainable environmental and governance role that Gen Z wants to have. So having Gen Z and younger generation on the table where these decisions are made can protect their values, can protect where they're coming from, and also can encourage them to voice the reasons why they are unsatisfied with the working environment at the moment.
Well, thank you. So Gen Z is currently facing higher living costs, inflation, and quite frankly, insane housing prices, just like everyone else in the country. But do you believe that employers should be taking these concerns into consideration when trying to improve workplace happiness?
Absolutely. We need to understand where the people are coming from. I cannot buy a home at the moment. Do I want to? Absolutely, yes. So younger generation wants to have stability and certainty. These are the two things that are missing at the workplace. When we are unsure, we are uncertain, we don't find meaning and purpose at work. And when we don't have meaning and purpose at work, we're not happy. It's simple as that. It's an equational relationship. So for workplace to be able to understand this, there should be benefits provided such as mental health benefits, such as being able to work remotely or in a flexible work environment, or support your younger employees and Generation Z employees to educate themselves, skill development. That can go a long way, and investing in your younger generation can prove to them that we want them to succeed. If you reciprocate in a way that if you allow people to develop, they are ready to reciprocate in a positive way. They will be better citizens at work. they will try to work as much as they can. They will participate in the development of the goal of the organization and the achievement of the organizational goal as well.
So I think you already touched on some of this in your last answer, but do you think there's a fundamental need for evolution from traditional management practices to new ways of management? And if so, what steps can we take to do this for Gen Z specifically and future generation?
So management style is constantly changing. What was management style in 2020 is different from what we have today, or starkly different from how it was in 2004. Why is it different? Because we call it the traditional working space where everybody was coming to work and doing their thing. Now it's different because we have flexible work environment. We're more fluid around having the work done, irrespective of the fact how productivity is impacted. Though recent research indicates that having fluid workspaces and flexible work environment is actually positively reflecting on our productivity and our performance. One thing I would like to add here is the financial wellness should be considered in the management style. Not every management style is developed around people working for the benefit of the organization. The management style should be built around people working for the benefit of themselves, for the benefit of their development, their skill, their quality of life. When we center around people being part of the organization with a purpose, we're not making them feel like they're just a cog in a machine. And that is the management style that needs to be differentiated for Generation Z. Because one thing I really like about Generation Z is that they do not hesitate to voice what they want, which is very different from millennials, because we, under the pressure of baby boomers, I know I'm shitting at some of the generations here, but under the pressure of baby boomers, we were like, oh, we need to work better. We need to string long hours to prove to our seniors that we are doing well. But Generation Z, they want the balance. They want the autonomy. They want the freedom, which is actually a good thing that research tells us. So we should be celebrating it rather than trying to push them into boxes that were fit for an older generation.
Thank you. That was an amazing answer. And kind of looking into the future for our last questions, if employers fail to meet the increasing needs and like the differing needs for Gen Z workers, what do you believe may be the long-term consequences of this, particularly in terms of things like productivity and employee turnover?
So in order for employees to be able to work better, they have to have purpose and meaning. When they don't have purpose and meaning at work, they're not going to perform very well. The second thing is higher demands and induced stress because of all of the disruptions and prevalence of AI is causing people to just quit. There is higher mental health crises, as Deloitte, PwC, and other reports have indicated as well. We need to be investing in mental health of our employees for them to be able to feel better, do better, and be productive at work. So if we are to lose our employees, A, we're not going to have taxable income in our country, and taxes provide a lot of social support in this country. Also, if we're not going to provide effective working environment, people are going to jump ship and go to Australia, which has been happening quite a lot this year. We lost around 8,000 NHS employees alone, and we are now struggling to complete the staffing in hospitals, which is really crucial. So all of these indicators can impact not just the organization and its profitability, but the entire society as a whole.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and your answers have been amazing and really helping us understand this idea better. And thank you for tuning in to Radio 1. Up next for you, we have Hina with Back Home. Thank you.
Kia ora and welcome to my film review segment. Today we're having a look at the Dunedin Film Society screening last night, which was The Long Absence, directed by a chap called Henri Colpi. I won't try and pronounce the French title because I will butcher it terribly.
So Jonah, what do you think about the movie? Did you enjoy it? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a bit of a mixed review today. I'd give it probably 3 stars out of 5. It was quite... So I'll just explain the plot briefly before I go into what I thought of it. So basically, it was about a... It's set in the 60s, so kind of post-war France, still sort of dealing with the long effects of the Second World War. And the main character is this woman called Therese. She's a cafe bar owner in the suburbs of Paris. And she's mourning the loss of her husband during the war, who essentially mysteriously disappeared, probably by the Gestapo or one of the German occupying agencies of that nature. And essentially this guy walks past the bar that she owns, and he's sort of a tramp, he's referred to in the film, or sort of a homeless guy. And he's a bit loopy, singing to himself, and she realizes, oh shit, this guy is my husband. But the problem is he's got amnesia because he was tortured so bad by the Gestapo, we find out, that he can't remember who he is or who his wife is. And she basically develops a series of strategies to try and get him to recover his memory and remember who he is. And it was a very compelling narrative. I'd say I did find the sort of first couple hours of... I'd say the first hour of the film was a bit slow for me. It wasn't super, super engaging. It wasn't exactly at the edge of my seat. But the last half hour of the film was just, like, so emotionally intense. And basically, I will give a spoiler. He gets to the point where we think he's sort of on the verge of recovering his memory and falling back in love with this woman. And there's this really beautiful scene where she put on a record that he liked, and they're dancing to it, and you can sort of see him on the cusp of regaining his memory. And basically what happens is he gets hit by a bus at the end of the movie, and that's the end of the movie.
That's quite a stark ending. Does it just, like, go black?
So he gets hit by a... You can see him getting hit by the bus, and then it goes to another shot of another one of this lady's love interests, who's another man who constantly is going to her bar. He's trying to... He's into her, and we see him trying to convince her to go on holiday with him early in the film before her husband shows up. And he's basically... The guy who he's trying to win her over says, he's gone. And she's like, what do you mean he's gone? And he just says, he's gone.
Oh, sounds like it kind of has a bit of everything, this movie. What would you give it a rating of?
I'd say 3 stars, just purely because I wasn't super engaged for the beginning of it, but I will say that it had some redeeming scenes and moments that really kind of had some just emotional intensity for me, which gave it some power as a film, I'd say.
Oh, thank you for telling us about this movie. Sounds very interesting. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you enjoy it, you should watch it. So up next for you, we have Too Much Love by Pass the Peas. And it was too much touch.
DPAG's late breakfast host, Alex Lister, joins the R1 News to talk about the latest art gallery news in Aotearoa. You can tune into the DPAG Late Breakfast Show at 11 a.m. on Saturdays on Radio 1 91 FM.
Kia ora, Alex. Welcome to R1 News at 1. How are you doing today?
I'm very wet. It is raining outside. It is cold. But other than that, you know, still breathing, so can't actually complain. How are yous going?
I'm glad to hear that you're still breathing. That's quite necessary. I'm a bit cold, but other than that, I'm doing okay.
Yeah. Nice. I'm all right. My socks are completely soaked through, which is not fun, but apart from that, I'm doing great.
Yeah, nice. Should have worn the flood pants today. Oh, well. So we're talking about art, are we?
Yeah.
Is that what you got on the
maybe.
Show? All right. Well, you remember last week how last time I was on the show and I was like, I'm going to go around to a different art gallery every week and I'm going to go see their exhibitions and I'm going to do that and then report back bi-weekly. Yeah, I lied. I haven't done that yet. But I am a lot more informed on what's going on. So there's actually not a whole lot of new. There's no pop-ups or anything at the moment that I could find personally. But the Moray Gallery has got an exhibition that's closing tomorrow that definitely needs to be gone and checked out. It's the current exhibition is another look at landscape. It's paintings by Julian Pope. And it's only on till tomorrow, so if people want to go check that out, then they should probably get onto that. It's on 55 Princes Street, so not exactly much travelling involved. It is just a bus ride away, or the Shoeberoos, if you're into that. And then the next exhibition, which will be opening after that, is the West Harbour North Dunedin, which is a joint exhibition by Alison Beavers and Kit McGregor. So no real update on when that's going to be, but I assume the next couple of weeks at least. And then the front window that they've got in, at the moment is The Red Boat Kaikoura by Peter Belton. And their side window, they have Keith Olsen's Rhododendron and Mrs. G.W. Leek. So that's what's going on at Moray Gallery. That's all I could really find. That's going on in Dunedin at the moment. Just the exhibition closing. So that's another look at Landscape by Gillian Pope. Head on down to Moray Gallery to see that. DPAG's got two exhibitions that are leaving us soon. So Transitions, Aotearoa to London, and Marjorie Blackman, Weaving Life. So Transitions is closing on the 6th of October, so that's just like a week away, maybe 2 weeks. Is that math right?
I'm not sure.
No, I'm an arts and culture person.
Couldn't tell you.
I'm an
arts
student.
Yeah, nice. We all paddle the same waka together. And then, Marjorie Blackman's Weaving Life is closing on the 13th of October, which is another week on top of that. Have you just gone and checked out those exhibitions yet?
No.
I can't say I have,
Particularly, sorry. Sorry to disappoint. But.
Well, you know, that's all right. I won't hold it against you. Transitions is just one gallery space. And then Weaving Life is spread across three. So Marjorie Blackman has got pretty much the whole catalogue being displayed there. And it's going to be quite a loss, I think, once this exhibition goes on the 13th of October, because it is actually really cool. So I implore everyone to go and check that out before it's gone, because you probably will regret it. That's about it, really. There's nothing else too exciting going on at the moment. But I should really go and check out these exhibitions, because I'm nothing if not an honest man. So. And I've lied to both of you, and I apologise for that profusely.
Anything interesting for your show on Saturday? Any guests or anyone?
Apart from just me, just being doing my usual goofy self, no guests this week. Next week we've got guests, which I don't want to spoil too much just yet. Not because I can't remember the details of that. Definitely not. But we are doing a giveaway on the DPAG Late Breakfast at the moment. So we've collabed with the DPAG, funnily enough, and they've got a bunch of old posters. So when they do exhibitions such as Marjorie Blackman's Weaving Life, they make posters that go along with it, and they're free to give away to the public. And naturally, they always make too many. So now they've got a whole backlog of them. So not just the current exhibitions, but previous exhibitions. So like quite far back ones as well. So we're doing a giveaway for those. So people just have to text in to the show and just tell me what their favourite art piece is, really, or just text in and you'll win yourself a free poster. And that's what's going on next week.
Easy as.
And then this week, sorry. And then next week, yeah, we've got some more interviews lined up. So that's it. That's what we're on the DPAG Late Breakfast at the moment. What have you guys got planned for the rest of the day?
I'm going to go home and study from the comfort of my own bed, personally.
Yeah, I have one more task to accomplish today. I'm interviewing a politics lecturer for the Pulsar Instagram, which is the Politics Students Association. Mm. We're doing kind of lecture profiles and asking them intrusive questions about their personal life.
Nice.
And then broadcasting them to the world. So I'm interviewing Dr. Christine Winter.
Excellent.
And then also going to go home to the comfort of my own bed and have a little nap, do some study.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Have you got anything planned?
Oh, well, you know, what's a day in the life of Alex Lister? That's a good question. No, I'm going to go to the gym straight after this. I'm probably going to swim there because it is raining so much. But that's right, that's cardio for the day done just there. So you go to the gym, and then I got work tonight, so I'll go to work and then sort it all again tomorrow.
Well, very exciting. Well, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me again. And I can't wait to do this again in 2 weeks' time.
And make sure you tune in to DPAG Late Brekkie Show on Saturdays at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. to get all the latest art and culture news with Alex Lister. Thank you.
Sly.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.